Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing.
Members, I declare the meeting open at 7 o'clock, and I begin by acknowledging the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians of this land, and we pay our respects to their elders past and present. I advise all persons in attendance that the audio of this General Council meeting will be recorded and will be made available on the City of Marion website. I ask whether, having had a look at the agenda, whether any elected members wish to declare a potential conflict of interest. Yes, Councillor Crossland.
Can I declare a conflict in the revised DPA? There is an area that's going to be rezoned fairly close to where I live, so for that section I'd like to leave.
Thank you, that's noted. Councillor Gard?
Yes, this may not be, but just to test the floor, Your Worship, I am potentially a developer in the Glengowrie area, a family estate situation, so in regard to the DAP for general residential, there is some sort of connection there.
But I'd ask our director, Ms. Jarrett, to advise on that governance aspect.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I do believe that a substantial class would actually exist with that, as the mayor has indicated that everybody does live in the City of Marion area, and that DPA does relate to the whole of the City of Marion.
Sorry, could that be repeated though? In the clear, yes.
Moved, Councillor Telfer, that they be confirmed. Seconded, Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried. There being no Youth Advisory Committee update, deputations or petitions, we go to page 23 of the agenda, the confirmation of the minutes of the Audit Committee. What it says on the agenda. Councillor Telfer, you'd like to move. You're moving as printed?
Yes.
And seconded, Councillor Pfeiffer. Did you wish to speak to it, Councillor Telfer?
Yes. We have rewritten the minutes to get some flavour of foci of what we can work on in the future. I'm looking forward to the funding, to the community service review discussion with council, at which point we can look at donations and whether we as a council want to use ratepayers' money for Christmas hamper donations and such like things, because I feel that there was a policy in the past that we leave the money in people's own pockets and they make their donations direct, and we don't make donations straight from council as such, because we all have our different places we want to donate to, and it's endless. So I'm happy to move as it is.
Councillor Telfer, I'll just apologise if I've got this wrong, but it's not the minutes that have been rewritten, but the format of the report that we receive about the minutes and the recommendations. So I think that's what you're saying.
Sorry, the recommendation and the summary is new, yes.
Indeed. Councillor Pfeiffer, did you wish to speak? Any other speakers? All those in favour? All those against? That's carried unanimously. So we move to page 36 of the report. This is the Seacliff Park Residential DPA. Is that what we're up to? So, Councillor Crossland, you may wish to
leave the chamber at this point and we'll call you back.
Sorry? I beg your pardon. Oh, sorry. Come on back. I thought it said Seacliff Park. That's not... Oh, it's the other one you were concerned about. I beg your pardon. Right, so this is the Seacliff Park Residential and Centre Development Plan Amendment. Looking for someone to move. Councillor Gard. And seconded Councillor Crossland. Councillor Gard, did you wish to speak to the motion?
Yes, this is a very long-awaited motion for as far as the people of the local area are concerned. Of course, I am a coastal ward councillor with Councillor Crossland, and it's not just the immediate vicinity that is standing to be very positively affected, but a number of suburbs in that sector. And it is certainly going to be a watershed in the establishment of the coastal ward, the upper coastal ward, upper being northern, in the city of Marion. It is not only needed in that particular site and location, but it is needed in that sector. There is precious little by way of good quality, concerted development merged with commercialisation in that sector before you actually get down to Marion Shopping Centre. I think everyone is aware that Brighton is basically a mess, Brighton Road, whereas Jetty Road Brighton is the opposite. But there is a paucity of that sort of development in that total southwestern part of the council. So it is long, long overdue. We have, I think, first notification of it being imminent came the year my family purchased in Marino, which was 2003. So it has been a very, very long wait. Obviously, things like contamination and dealings with Borrell about their adjoining road, the haulage road into Borrell, have been issues. But being relieved that we've reached this point, I would certainly like to acknowledge the very hard work done by staff members, people like John Valentine and David Milhunish, who have really driven this extremely hard. It is to be a project to really be remembered, and I think only time will tell us to just how much that is so.
Councillor Gard, your motion calls for four councillors to be on panel to hear public submissions. I'm just going to depart from standing orders. Shoot me down if you don't want me to, but I'll ask for a show of hands about who might be willing to hear the representations. One, two, three, four. So that's Councillor Telfer, Councillor Hull, Councillor Gard and Councillor Crossland. So I take it, Councillor Gard, your motion incorporates the names of those four councillors.
Yes, I'm satisfied with that.
Yes. Councillor Crossland, did you wish to speak?
I'd just like to add that, yes, this has been a long time coming and there's been a lot of work been happening over those years. And just to add that this is something which the local residents have also been pushing for, and they've seen the plans, and I believe that it will get a lot of community support in that area.
Is there anyone speaking against the motion? Question? Yes, Councillor Valeska.
Just double check. Would the councillors involved, particularly the ward councillors, be limited in any way in future if they were sitting on that panel? Because I think Councillor Pfeiffer may have been limited to some extent when he sat on the one for the Castle Plaza.
I'll allow Councillor Pfeiffer to answer that or contribute to that.
Thank you. There was minor difference there in that I wasn't actually on the panel. I was a representor to the panel, so minor difference
there. I'd ask Ms. Jarrett if there's anything to add.
No, I don't believe there's any restrictions placed on the ward councillors.
Sure that they didn't impact on the representative role as well. Well.
Mr. Hull, please proceed.
I think that it is important to clear this up. So there's no misunderstandings.
There's one issue of being a councillor, it's another issue to be the chair of the local residents association. And I would probably just pose that question as to whether there's any perceived conflict by virtue of that. What I'm saying is, can you wear two hats on this one?
Ms. Jarrett?
I believe that there would be no pecuniary benefit or disbenefit to an elected member in this regard. However, I think that if an elected member wishes to take a representation role versus a governance decision-making role in terms of council's decisions as a whole in terms of the residential development plan amendment, that would be a decision for the councillor.
Thank you, and we wish your voice a full recovery. Did you wish to, well, I'll just see, Councillor Hull, did you have a further question? Well,
very quick. Members, the importance of this is, unless you've read the full report, is significant. For the first time, this council is probably going to vote to support the building of structures up to six stories in a residential setting. I'm not aware of that happening before. I stand to be corrected on that. And it's just a place to do it because there's no overlooking and overshadowing issues and all that. It's fantastic. But it certainly is the trigger to transform Marina. And I'm just looking forward to seeing this through. That's why I put my hand up, Mr. Mayor. Having been to the community meetings, out of interest, I think it's a fascinating little project. I tend to do this. I went on the DPA for the Edwardstown one as well, and the historical reference one recently. So it's just something I like to do, and this is a really, really nice one.
Councillor Dutt?
Yes, just on the matter of any conflict, I would certainly be watchful of myself in that regard. My abode is just immediately west of where the development will be, and Councillor Hull is quite correct in saying that there could, in certain situations, be a two-hat circumstance. I'd be watchful for that. The likelihood is that I would not want to chair the panel if that were to be the case of the four councillors interfacing with residents. I think that would be inappropriate in those circumstances. However, I have, on the other hand, had a lot to do way before my time on council with representation of residents for that site, and they know me well as virtually a part of the furniture in that regard. So it would come as no surprise to them that I would be at least in the four councillors making up that number, making up that party.
I'll put that to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. We move to page 109 of the agenda. This is the Residential General Development Plan Amendment, and I note Councillor Crossland's left the meeting because it does concern a number of specific properties in Hallett Cove. Looking for a motion. Move to Councillor Telfer. Are you moving as the motion is printed?
Yes.
Is that seconded? Seconded, Councillor Pfeiffer. Did you wish to speak to the motion, Councillor Telfer?
A lot of the changes are quite small. The residential general development plan has a generic statewide structure, and within it some very interesting green sections that relate to this council. Some of those I'd like to be more definite so that the plan actually turned into the reality around different areas we find that when we get the built form, it is very tight, and I am very mindful just at the moment of the corner of Dwyer and Johnston Road, where there is a slab of concrete laid last week, and the fence line to the house will be about 600 millimetres. And on a roundabout, that seems to me to be so close that there's going to be cars going into the fence, if not into the building. This is unfortunate, the denseness that we've got, but we look forward to this plan turning hopefully into worthwhile guidelines that we can make stronger in actual implementation, because I think that's the problem. Not the plans that we have, but how we implement them so far from the actual plans. So we look forward to this step.
Did you wish to speak, Councillor Pfeiffer? Any other speakers against the DPA proposal? If not, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried by a majority. Could someone ask Councillor Crossland to come back in? And we're now moving to the item on page 244 of the agenda. This concerns the Darlington Upgrade Project, and I draw members' attention to the Marion Council proposed response on page 248 onwards, because part of the recommendation suggested by staff is the endorsement by council of that submission. So, moved, Councillor Hull. Is that going to be seconded by Councillor Telfer? Councillor Hull, did you wish to speak?
I commend the staff for their report and their guidance to us in terms of what should be an appropriate response to the government in terms of this significant project. Members who were at, and I don't know whether I'm speaking out of turn, by reflecting on the DIPTI presentation the other night, last week, where it became apparent that pedestrian and bicycle connectivity was going to be an afterthought, not the primary planning focus. And I did challenge the DIPTI rep as to why that would be in this modern age, that pedestrian traffic and cycling traffic is something they'll consider well into the project rather than at the very forefront. In Europe, I think it'd be quite the opposite. And this is an opportunity. This area really demands the respect of this report, because if you think about it, with a major teaching hospital, a major university, the Tonsley development, Warrapuringa, all of those, you know, really rich trip generators for cyclists and pedestrians are there. And if we don't actually get it right now, it's going to create hardship for cyclists and pedestrians into the future. It's in terms of the project cost, Mr. Mayor, what we're actually asking for is small beans. It's very small beans. But it can actually be one of the most impressionable attributes of the project that people will notice, other than those who are preoccupied with the internal combustion engine and the car. So I think that this is fantastic. The staff they don't seem to have left anything to chance in terms of explaining their position. It's well presented and really should demand the eye of any respected government to actually pick up these points for not only Marion but also for Mitcham as well.
Thank you. It it's probably a bit late in the day, but I did just want to point to a typographical error, page 256 under heading numbered 5, the first dot point. At the end of it, it should be a question mark, not a full stop. I'm sure that can be incorporated into the motion. Councillor Telfer.
I am very concerned about the noise attenuation barriers at Clovelly Park South. The reason I'm concerned is because what we have now in Sturt and Darlington is substandard. It's a terrible rusty fence with silver bars. And I am fearful for the Clovelly South people in terms of getting something as bad as that. The people in Sturt and Darlington have been promised landscaping when it rained. It is now raining and they don't have it. So I am very keen that what happens in Clovelly South in terms of noise attenuation barriers or other barriers along the highway, I hope they are, and I would expect they are, the quality of what we see at South Road and that highway corner, because it is unfair of Clovelly Park residents to be enclaved with ugly barriers. So that sticks out for me as the main thing that really concerns me. The second thing I'd say is that in our submission, we had a lot of work done 5 years ago on plans for light rail to Flinders Medical and Flinders University. And if, as long as we put in that we are trying to allow for a path for rail, or we're putting in rail lines, I think we're not going to get anywhere. As soon as we start talking light rail, which is possible, we could well get the extension of Tonsley on through up to Flinders Medical with beside it greenway pathways for walking and cycling. So I look forward very much to seeing that light rail and also to seeing those paths for cycling and walking, as well as the super highway for those that drive at some speed through and out the other side of our city. The last point I'd make is the concern about what happens during the building phase. The cars are going to be, and vehicles are going to be here on the corner of Sturt Road and Diagonal Road in mass. There will be any shortcut you can find to avoid South Road during the building phase. And that's going to be a difficult time for many of us, I think.
Thank you. Anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor
Quire? It's perhaps not against, it's maybe for a slight amendment in that I really would like us to consider whether we can advocate for a provision to be made for a rail at the centre or on one side. I think it's worth mentioning. I understand that the budget probably doesn't swell that far, but I think if it's at least considered in the design phase, then in the future we may be able to take up that option.
Are you suggesting some particular wording, Councillor Pryor?
The short answer is no.
Perhaps, I mean, it is possible to come back just as a part of the general advocacy of council, and that could come up as a motion with notice that we write to the Federal Transport Minister, the State Transport Minister, etc., with support for that proposal. So it could be done on another occasion.
My fellow councillor has just given me some advice in the public transport section on page 254.
Right.
We could probably put something in that says the City of Marion supports the provision for a future rail link up the centre of the, or in the centre of the proposed motorway.
So in effect, what you would be doing is amending motion number 2 as part of the 4 motions that Councillor Hull moved, and he might agree to incorporate this into the motion, such that the draft response from the City of Marion would include a third dot point under the heading public transport, which states the City of Marion supports a design which allows for the future construction of a light rail link to Flinders Medical Centre from the Tonsley line.
I'm talking a completely different railway.
I beg your pardon. Down the middle of the South Road.
Complete.
Well, if we can keep that structure where we get to the dot point, I was putting words into your mouth, but no, please, can you state succinctly what you would like to see?
I'd like to see provision for rail up the centre of the motorway in the future, or at least consideration of a rail up the centre of the motorway in the future.
Have a look up on the screen to see that it's captured by staff.
Mr. Mayor, seeing I was asked that there are two different purposes here. If Councillor Pryor was talking about an extension of the Tonsley line being light rail, as Councillor Telfer suggested, up the Flinders Medical Centre and University, then I would be happy to have that in the motion, but what Councillor Pryor is talking about is substantially different and substantially more expensive.
Right, so Councillor Pryor, are you putting that as an amendment?
Don't see any other option at this stage.
Okay, well, I'll take that as an amendment. Is that seconded? Councillor Pfeiffer, did you wish to speak, Councillor Pfeiffer?
Very briefly, thanks, Your Worship. Look, the provision of future-proofing for the Tonsley line is part of this. That's already in the motion and what's discussed here, and that's definitely required. You know, we need to make sure that we're putting the right size bearers in on that Flinders Link bridge, just to make sure that we can take light rail over it. What Councillor Pryor is mentioning here is something, it is quite different, but it's something that I think there is a lot of value behind, at least forward thinking on matters like this. You only need to go to Perth to see what they've done with rail up the centre of highways, and it is their rail system is second to none. It's absolutely phenomenal. We may not get to the point of actually putting rail up the middle of that corridor for 20, 30, 50 years, but at least if you've got the provision there right from where go, it's an opportunity in the future. And if you miss this opportunity now, it's going to cost you, billions later on to actually retrofit it. Now, whether the need is there or not, it's just it's an option for us to keep on the table for the moment, I think.
There's a question, Your Worship. I'm just wanting to clarify with Councillor Pryor as to whether you mean the entire 76 kilometres from south to north, because I doubt whether the provision is there north and south already, or are you speaking of what's to come?
Yeah, look, Councillor Pryor's harebrained scheme reminds me of a harebrained scheme that Councillor Gard did in his work life that he shared with us, that he came up with a ridiculous idea that people can bet under a tree without going to a TAB and be able to collect the winnings. Ugh, never happened. If you didn't note the sarcasm, I think it's worth considering. I think it's a good option. So, and I think also, look at what we think is silly now, because probably or unachievable, could actually be a good idea and could be a benefit to our residents, you know, in a generation or so to come. So I'm happy to support the amendment.
I'm going to speak against the amendment. I just don't think it's feasible. The government's going to have to acquire enough land as it is to expand it, and it's not going to acquire extra and just leave it sitting there for some idea in the future.
Yeah, just in answer to Councillor Gard's question, I'd be happy for it to go the whole 76 Ks. I don't think that the provision's been made some of the other places down the line. Whether we'll in the future be trading off two lanes of traffic, two lanes of cars for a train, that's up for discussion. I think it just bears something that stays in there that says, hey, look, we're interested in what can happen in this zone.
Mr. Mayor, I find it hard to criticise a futuristic outlook like this. However, to have a realistic outlook, that we've got the big enough challenge as it is to get a small light rail, as suggested by Councillor Telfer, from Tonsley up to the university and the hospital, which is only 300 metres. If Councillor Pryor was suggesting that we advocate for that, but it's already in that report anyway, that the provision's there, the bridge will be strong enough to handle that. That's something, I guess, but it's not the optimum outcome. I guess if we had different people in Canberra, we would be having a different discussion tonight about public transport on a national level. So I don't want to send a signal to the state government that the Marion Council is fanciful and take away our sincere outlook that they will actually do an achievable thing, being the light rail from Tonsley up to the university and the hospital. I don't want to be disrespectful, but I don't want to give the state government an opportunity to discount what the community's been saying, because we've actually put forward an even grander plan that will catch them by surprise. Mr. Mayor, this is not what Councillor Pryor is suggesting is not out of step with reports that we've already received. We've had reports from consultants about a tram line going straight past the front here, down Diagonal Road and connecting up. It's not out of that thinking. So I don't want 1 minute to make Councillor Pryor feel silly about what he's proposing. But at the same time, I don't want the state government to think that they're going to be let off the hook because we've got some grander plan and we'll get poo-hoo. Our focus, the immediate focus, should be getting that light rail to place the connectivity for the same reasons why we want the bike and the pedestrian connectivity, we need the public transport connectivity. And that's what my focus is at this point in time. In terms of rail, we actually have a city to the south railway line anyway, which has only just been electrified and probably should be extended into the future to take us down to other places as well. That, to me, is the strategic outlook with rail in the south. We've got our own issues with rail and light rail.
Those against, please raise your hand. The amendment is lost. I put the original motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by majority. Thank you. I'm just surprised that nobody revived the Clem Senior monorail from Westfield to Flinders idea, but anyway, it's time will come. It's time will come. We move to page 272 of the agenda, the Boatshed Cafe variation of lease. Moved Councillor Crossland. Is that going to be seconded? Councillor Gard. Councillor Crossland, did you wish to speak?
I'll just speak very briefly. Obviously, I know a lot of history about this particular building. It's a fantastic council asset. In fact, if we were trying to build that particular cafe there today, we would not be given planning permission. Look, for people in Howick Cove and the coastal walking trail, it's a fantastic place to go. I've been pleased to see that business grow. This was always a planned capital works program to that building, depending on how the business went and how the proprietor of the time could actually invest such a large amount of money in the building without ruining their business. Obviously, they've done some form of a cost-benefit analysis, and they're willing to put in a considerable amount of their own money in return. We're just keeping the rent down to a peppercorn rent scenario to allow them to do these works. And at the end of the day, the works that they do is making an asset that we own even more valuable. So it's a win-win for council. I don't suggest for one minute that we look at running our own business down there, because I don't think we'd make a go of it. So I'd like everyone to support the motion as is, please.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. First things first, I would invite all councillors and their families to use the Boat Shed Cafe, because it really is the first-rate business. The food is delightful and the view is absolutely spectacular and quite unique. It's one of the little gems of the coastal ward, and I take this opportunity to mention the very significant role that Councillor Crossland played in the commencement of the concept initially. I think we all have him to thank for that, and of course it's gone to from stage to stage, and now it's going to what may be, may not be, a final stage. The quality of the business people, mother and daughter involved, as far as their acumen is concerned, is first rate. I have every confidence that what happens there will happen very well and effectively for all residents and for the business itself. And council will, I'm sure, get quite a large applause if this motion is carried.
Subject to this motion being approved, could we not have the same outlook, Mr. Mayor, in other parts of the city, namely the roundhouse near the Oaklands wetlands? Can the same principles be repeated in terms of private public ownership, this is what it is, in other parts of the city to bring about the same sort of outcomes that we're talking about tonight? So that's my enduring question. It is.
Got a question. So effectively, where this, I guess what, and I guess we've got to be consistent. We've gone on questioning kindergartens being subsidised, rent, and other facilities getting peppercorn subsidised rent, and we're looking to extend that subsidy for a private business, albeit, you know, one that is deemed quite worthy. So I'm just wondering where the difference is there.
Thank you, Councillor. I think you might find that the difference is that we, as a council, are making our own cost-benefit analysis, and we're getting a council asset increased in value by the extent of the capital works, which is different to the other examples. But I'll invite Mr. Mifsud to add to that.
Through the chair, the mayor's absolutely spot on. The big difference is that in this case here, the current operators are committing a substantial investment to enhance that facility, which the council will have long-term benefit on. That's vastly different to typical leases that we've got throughout the City of Marion.
Does that add increase our maintenance and renewal costs, as they do when we increase the value of all our other assets?
Through the chair, no. If you read through the report, we do have a minor level of responsibility in the order of about $6,000 per year, which is fully budgeted for within council's endorsed budget. But in regards to all other responsibilities, that fully sits with the lessees, not with council.
But what we're doing is we're increasing the value. So, you know, for example, the lessees may make a fortune, decide to live on the other side of the world, and okay, fair enough, you know, well done, they've worked hard. But then we've got an asset at that increased value. Is that going to be factored in?
Through the Chair, when we grant landlord consent for the capital works, all responsibility for ongoing maintenance costs rests with the tenants.
From the $6,500 that we pay already?
Yep, through the Chair. So we do, as a landlord, which in accordance with the Retail and Commercial Leases Act, do have some responsibility, which is for general maintenance costs, plumbing, security as well. So that rests with all the properties that we own. And for this property, it's $6,500 each year. And that's within this.
Sorry, I just want to clarify.
You're allowed three questions. You've had four. I know you're trying to clarify and get an answer, but...
The question I had was, if we have an asset that's worth $200,000 and it's increased in value to $450,000, when the tenants leave, have we factored in the maintenance and renewal costs in that, as we do with all our other asset management plans, following the prudent approach that council is taking? That's fine.
I invite the staff to comment.
Yeah, through the chair. Your point, I certainly understand. Obviously, if these tenants decide to move on at some stage in the future, council would have a number of options that it would want to explore. Number one would be whether or not we want to re-lease it out, or even other options along the lines of whether we'd want to sell the whole business altogether, lock, stock and barrel.
Mr. Mifsud, if I can just help Councillor Blescu out here, the question seems to be an accounting one, that have we taken into account the long-term costs of holding the asset, albeit increased in value after these capital works are undertaken? So would that be in the long-term financial plan, for example?
Through the Chair, as it currently stands, we don't have those responsibilities. So whilst your question is absolutely valid as it stands at the moment, there's nothing built into the long-term plan other than the $6,500 of operating and maintenance costs that we are responsible for. And the reason being is the tenants, under their existing agreement, are responsible for everything other than that.
Thank you, Your Worship.
Happy to help. Any other speakers? If not, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's carried by a majority. And so we go to...
I think that was unanimous, Your Worship.
No, it was carried by majority. I've got a better view from up here, Councillor Appleby. Or at least a different one. Councillors, we're on page 281 now, dealing with the draft South Australia's waste strategy. So, in other words, this is Council's response to the state government wanting to have a conversation about waste, with a very extensive submission that Council staff have prepared. So looking for someone to move. If you would like to endorse the submission or otherwise, yeah, Councillor Hull.
Happy to do so. I think that one of the legacies that this council has is Peddlers Creek.
Sorry, just to be clear, you're moving the motion as printed in the agenda.
I am, yep. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Please go
so,
on.
So in terms of the suggested strategies, a lot of those practices are already happening by virtue of our involvement with Peddlers Creek. Our four barbers and four sisters, is that a word? I actually saw the merit in forming that alliance with the city of well, there was a number of cities back then, because there was the city of Brighton and was certainly involved, and then there would have been Happy Valley and all of those other councils that are no longer, because they've been amalgamated, councillor. And that has actually created a great bonus for our, an enduring bonus for our citizens. Because if that wasn't there, functioning the way it is, we'd be carting our ways some distance at a cost, okay? But not only that, down there they're actually using fairly modern practices to actually compact and all that, but also co-generating electricity down there as well, which we're selling back to the southern part of the city. So there's some really good examples down there of best practice in terms of waste management. This report obviously goes further to that, because it's talking about climate change and all those things that our forefathers and foremothers wouldn't have even dreamt of. So, yeah, I support this, and hopefully the government will actually listen to local government, who has the closest relationship with waste than any other level of government. Maybe that doesn't make sense either, Mr. Mayor.
I'll second the motion. And in doing so, I take to mind page 316, page 32 of the report about energy from waste. Obviously, we are creating lots of waste, and we grapple all the time with how we can create energy, particularly at Headless Creek, in the most efficient ways so that we can be using what we've got to its maximum.
I'd like to nominate myself and Councillor Gard. Yes, please. Yeah, obviously, as Coastal Ward Councillor, I've got a keen interest in what exactly this committee does. I must say, though, I'll be wearing two hats. I'll also be looking at whether we get value from this committee and whether it is something that Marion Council as a whole is actually going to see a benefit from, because I do know there is a slight cost implication. However, I do believe there is value, and I've seen firsthand the erosion and issues we're getting along our coastline, so I'll be keen to be involved in that conversation.
Yes, Your Worship, it's quite a passion of mine. When I was born, my parents lived on the sandhills at what was then called Kirkcaldy and now Grange, and then came the esplanades along the front, and that was really the beginning of the end of a lot of good things. And anything that I can do, idea I could generate, or just simply to put in my bit, I'd be delighted to be able to do with this. I think the our coastline is one of the great coastlines of any city in Australia. And it is a very, very important asset, not just to the city, but to the state. And it's absolutely paramount that we do every possible thing in the process of planning and preservation to ensure that it stays that way, if not improves.
Is this Coastal Ward night tonight, Mr. Mayor? I just thought I'd ask the question.
I move as per the recommendation. We need to do all we can in terms of resilience to climate change, and we now have 13 10-year events in a 10-year, as we heard last night. So we do have those more dramatic events in weather, and we need to work towards ways that we, as a wider community, working with other councils, can solve this, but only for this year. We will look at it again next year.
Yeah, I will briefly, thank you. Look, this particular role, it's about getting ducks lined up, and it's about aligning things. So it's about ensuring that those councils near us, that you know, we are talking to each other, we are working off the same song sheet in terms of the data that we're using. We are planning things. I mean, there's no point in planning stormwater upstream if you're not planning stormwater downstream. Same with sea level rise type issues as well. I mean, there's no point in one council, you know, planning their infrastructure in one way and another council doing it another way. This is just about bringing people together, bringing the councils together, and getting ducks lined up.
Thank you, Worship. We already have an environmental department. This is duplication, and I think it should be eradicated.
Yeah, I think that the issues covered are a lot more complex, and I guess, you know, to sort of... the climate change is real. It is causing problems now. It's going to cause our residents problems, and we have a duty of care to see that plans are put in place to help... mitigate some of those problems, and we need someone specifically in that role for the plans that will affect us and our neighbours. I guess this is about us looking beyond our own interests in our city, in ourselves, and into the wider area to mitigate some of the issues that are going to arise and that are arising now.
Yep, there's nothing there tonight, I'm sorry to help you. Mr. Mayor, even the City of Marion has the broad tapestry of having climate change deniers within our ranks. And unfortunately, climate change is happening. How many times have they mentioned...
Councillor Hull, I'm going to call you to order there. That was a personal reflection, and you should withdraw that.
I wasn't talking about you.
I don't care who you were talking about. You were talking about another councillor, so you should withdraw that remark. That was, you know, we know you're talking about Councillor Appleby. That was not his position. It was a budget position he was putting. It wasn't denying climate change. So you need to withdraw that because it was wrong.
Right, well, it might be a badge of honour for Councillor Appleby. I'm not sure. But
are you going to withdraw that?
I will.
Thank you. Please proceed.
As I was saying, we've come so far. This has been going 4 years. We've already spent quite a lot of money to get to this point. And we're actually now at the point of implementation. Now, mind you, Mr. Mayor, this is a period where, with a new council that is more critical of expenditure, where we might have to see a little bit more delivery from this group to actually make it very clear what their intentions are. Because, Mr. Mayor, the thing that I've noticed about the government, now the government are leading this, I understand, and local government's contributing. is that when we actually ask for street trees on our major roads, it's the government that says no. It's the same government that actually is telling us about adapting to climate change that's saying no to us to a real measure that would help with the effects of climate change, the heat sinks in our major thoroughfares. That's what really annoys me. And if this group does not make inroads into changing that mindset by our government, who might have climate change deniers within their ranks, Mr. Mayor, then we're wasting our money. So that basically continue, but this group is on notice to deliver, to actually show that there's actually tangible outcomes coming from what will be a 5-year process. That's all I'm saying.
Councillors Pfeiffer, Telfer, Pryor, Hull, Westwood, Byrom, Valescu, Gard and Crossland, please sit down. All those against, please stand. Councillors Kerry, Hutchinson and Appleby, the motion is carried. Fags have been frozen, and now that I've got your attention, would someone like to move? Doesn't anyone care about fags anymore? We should. It's worth a lot of money. Councillor Valescu.
I think the acronym is probably... Okay. I'm happy to move the motion as is. I think that an indexation when your costs rise is a cut by another name. That's something that we'd expect other levels of government to be consistent on.
Thank you. I should clarify that I only referred to the acronym because it was referred to in the report. We're talking about financial assistance grants. Is that seconded? Second, Councillor Gard, do you wish to speak? Other speakers? Councillors, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? It's carried by a majority. So I'll write the letters that you've requested, and I know that Mr. Mipswood has some additional detail about how the indexation will have a specific impact on Marion Council. So that'll be in the letters that I write. And just to remind members that any correspondence that, well, of any substance that comes in from state or federal members or state government departments generally, to the Mayor, or letters that I write back to them, will appear on the extranet under correspondence. Just reminding you. Page 345, we're now on motions with notice from councillors. Councillor Crossland to move equitable services across the council. Beg your pardon, they're questions. I really should have brought my glasses. So we note the questions on equitable services, renewable infrastructure. And so I think we go to page 348. Motion moved by Councillor Crossland, community safety vehicles. Move, Councillor Crossland.
Yeah, I'd like to move this motion. Basically, we have 5 community safety vehicles which deal with all our enforcement across council, from barking dogs to legally dumped rubbish to parking offences. This really came about because I realised myself that we don't actually have any visible council vehicles patrolling our streets. And when we had the deputation from, I believe it was Township Road, the community there stated that the council had never been out there to assess parking issues and never actually monitored the site. And then we heard from the community safety inspectors to say that they'd regularly been there, but they were covert, so nobody would have known they were there. I personally find that fairly unacceptable based on the fact that we want to be a deterrent in education. I don't think we can be a deterrent or offer really visible education when nobody actually sees us. So I think really basically on the basis of the issues which I've listed, which I'm not going to repeat because they're there in black and white, there's a huge number of benefits. The only downside is we will have to pay for some graphic on the side of the vehicle, slightly bigger than the 11.5 centimetres we currently stick on there. And the other negative would be that if we do get a particularly sensitive situation, I found out from Onkaparinga they have two a year, they'll actually have to borrow a plane flea, or if it's so sensitive, ask the person to attend the council if they don't want to have a council vehicle parked outside.
Councillor Crossland, just a clarification, there is an alternative motion put forward by staff, but your motion, you're moving the motion as you wrote it?
Yeah, I don't.
Councillor Blascu, seconding the motion.
I just want to clarify, is it all council safety vehicles or a council safety vehicle? Okay, because just want to clarify, five or
Yes, let's
just to clarify, there's five community safety vehicles. All five will be liveried based on their age, obviously. One of them will also have a light bar, which is a very low profile light bar. Only one of our vehicles is used at night on an on-call basis, so it makes sense to have one vehicle that has that extra safety feature or can be used in other road hazard situations.
Can I just ask a question? How much is the estimate in terms of funding number of horses? Any costs associated with this motion will be funded from existing budgets?
Various options with costing? So, just to clarify, the sign writing for the five vehicles, rather depends on how it's done. Would you like to answer the question as we go, Councillor Crossland?
My preference would be, instead of a total wrap, I think that's probably overdone, would be a large logo and community safety inspector or community safety text along the side. Early indications I obtained from different companies were that would cost around $2,500 per vehicle, which is sort of in between all those options there.
So I suppose the table on page 350, Councillor Kerry, you could take as indicative. Potentially, that's right. Something under 20,000.
And those vehicles are kept for 3 years, so that's a 3-year cost.
Other speakers or questions? Councillor Blescu, you've already spoken.
I just had a question.
Sure.
To clarify. Look, I think this is important because we want residents to know what our staff are doing and when they're out in the community. And I think that being visible and also letting them know that we're out to enforce things, because I think there is sometimes the impression with some people in the community that the council doesn't care and they don't do anything, especially about some of the issues in regards to parking or other issues that the people would attend to. So I think we're actually letting people know here we are, we're out to help our residents, and
okay,
I think it's beneficial.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Appleby.
Thank you, Worship. This issue was raised last term, wasn't supported then, and I don't think it should be supported now. I think that we should just be letting the staff get on with their job, not drawing extra attention to themselves. And I also think it risks turning the city into a police state.
I won't take that as a reflection at all, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor, I'm going to suggest that in speaking to the motion, that Marion possibly has the most covert inspectorial staff in the state of South Australia. When you think about the vehicles, there's another issue of the so-called uniform. You'd have to be standing alongside them to realise that they may be associated with the Marion Council, not necessarily an inspector or anybody with authority or can issue an expiation notice or anything like that. So when you put those two together, it actually does paint a picture of a very covert organisation. And that's not what I would like to see Marion be. And that's why I raised it last council term. I'm more hopeful this council term because there's different mix of people, one of which is a police officer. And he actually does bring some knowledge and understanding to the place in this area. I have been with Councillor Coslin, with meetings to the staff, we've researched this, we've done our homework, we've thought it through. And the cost involved will actually be well and truly paid back by the community, knowing that we're actually out there, you know, in the streets, in their streets. The fact that we don't have those additional lighting on the vehicle out there right now causes me concern because the average hazard lights really probably does not cut the mustard for every situation that they may be in. If you've got to park your vehicle near where the problem is, it might not always be the safest place. So I think that we have an obligation there as well. So I'm looking forward to new council and a new culture, Councillor Appleby. Thank you.
Your Worship, as the member with a substantial marketing background, it would be very remiss of me not to speak to this motion. I would love to see the word marketing come a lot more into the City of Marion in many, many levels. This is one important level, the public level. It is most important that when people are your customers, as our residents are, that they see that service is being delivered. And it is futile to try and convince people that they're getting service when, on the other hand, you're covering up the fact. So I see that as a great contradiction for any of those that are intending to vote against the motion. I think the amount of money is absolutely nothing compared with the importance of doing this thing.
Yeah, just briefly, as I say, this is all about community reassurance. It's definitely not a police state issue. In fact, the presence of a marked vehicle will result possibly in less expiation notices being issued because the staff, before they even get out of their vehicle, will find that most people will do the right thing and drive away. They immediately get motivated and educated. Less confrontation with staff, and our community will actually see our council staff out there doing the work in which they've requested, such as the traffic issues in Township Road. And I think even from our councillor point of views, that's a benefit because they won't be asking us what's happening because we've never seen anybody. Hopefully they'll be ringing up with positives. I'll draw your attention to the fact that every other council except for ours has logoed community safety vehicles. I've spoken to Onkaparinga Council. They've had nothing but positives out of less confrontation, a lot more community engagement on the street with people, a lot of support, and ultimately I personally believe it will give a safer work environment to our staff.
where is it? South Road, Edwardstown, but it's not the currently proposed one, is it? This is one that's been there for a while, and they haven't complied with how they should have painted it from some time ago. So I don't think there's an issue for DAP members to stay in. Is that a question, Councillor? No. Councillor Blescu? Can anyone help with that? Councillor Hutchinson?
Well, I made an inquiry onto the latest phone tower proposal and I was advised last week that this tower is indeed a Vodafone tower.
So is this one the subject of this motion?
Yeah.
Right.
Because it came up in the conversation regarding that. But we can. That was a staff member from planning that advised me that, but we can check.
Right. Let's deal with the motion. Councillor Hull to move.
Well, if I may seek clarification as to, I wouldn't like to impugn the wrong telco's been involved, if we can sort that one out.
Well, I'm not sure that it really is relevant to the motion because this is about the painting of the top of the mast, isn't
it's
it?
It's got Telstra in my motion, that's the only thing.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So would you like to adjourn this to the next meeting?
No, I just get it clarified.
Ms. Peretti can help with that.
Thank you. Through the chair, it is a Telstra. It isn't owned by Telstra. It is actually the particular tower is owned by Crown Castle, but Telstra were the applicant on this particular proposal that was approved some time ago.
And Ms. Peretti, can you explain then the obligation upon? What the obligation was and upon whom the obligation fell in terms of the colour of the top of the tower.
Thank you. Through the chair, the obligation remains with Crown Castle to repaint the tower back to its original grey hue, which is what Councillor Hull is seeking through this motion. What had happened was the tower obtained the approval. Telstra was the applicant, Crown Castle the owner. The approval was given and erroneously Crown Castle painted the tower fully in obstacle marking when only that portion of the tower that intrudes into prescribed airspace should have been painted. But because this is a federal civil aviation issue, the approval to repaint the tower, that part of the tower that does not intrude into the prescribed airspace, back to its original grey hue had to come from the Federal Department of Infrastructure and Regional Development. That approval has now been given, and as a result, we amended the motion at Councillor Hull's request and approval.
Thank you. Do you have a question, Councillor Hutchinson?
Question, Your Worship, for the staff. Staff mentioned that it was the applicant was Telstra, was that at the original application for the tower to be erected, because that was my understanding, and then the subsequent application I believe was the landholder or the party who looks after that site, and that the antennas on that, if you want to get specific about telcos, isn't actually the original applicant that built the tower in the first place. So I just wanted to clarify, when we're talking about Telstra, they were the applicant at which point, the original build or the subsequent variation?
They were the applicant at the original build. They were also involved in the subsequent application to the Federal Department to have the line marking changed. My understanding is that that was requested through Adelaide Airport. I actually spoke to the person that did that, and it's Crown Castle that actually is, as we said, is the owner. I'm not sure which telco has antennas on it. We were just basically seeking to amend the obstacle marking.
There was a question I asked earlier. The obligation falls on who, the owner or the applicant?
Through the chair, on the owner.
Oh. Councillor Hull, do you wish to move your motion in an amended form? So just delete the words and Telstra.
Yeah.
All right. Well, please proceed.
Mr. Mayor, this was raised during the last council term as an issue because I was involved, along with other councils, back in the day when this barn tower was proposed. There were a group of residents in Christina Court, which runs off South Road, that were outraged about the prospect of the phone tower. And when I saw this livery put on the phone tower, the colour, I could only imagine what the residents thought, that this was a telco rubbing their nose into it. And I also thought about the consequences across the city of Marion, at least, as to whether this was going to be a precedent. I later found out it actually had to do with airspace, with the approach to the Adelaide Airport. However, I do question as to why the light poles on the Inverson crossing are not also red and white, because they're just as high as the phone tower. So there's bits and pieces I don't understand about this. Mr. Mayor, most importantly, these people have been given more than enough opportunity to sort this. I've got correspondence going way back from council staff where we're at the same point some time ago, and the telcos have known our concern and have done nothing. And as far as I'm concerned, the gloves are going to come off, and if they don't correct it by the 28th of June, we take them to court. We take punitive action against them, we engage our lawyers, and we actually represent the citizens of the city appropriately, because I think there is a precedent here. If we actually go along with this, we could suddenly find the corporate colours of telcos going up on the mastheads all over the city, and I don't think that would be an outcome that we want. Curiously, there's a phone tower on Crossroad, on the very same street, literally, down near the tram line in the grounds of Rawson's Electrical, that is just as high and closer to the airport. It's got no markings at all. So there's another irregularity in their thinking. So I'm not encouraging that to have colours, by the way, but it's just a point in question. Mr. Mayor, I just hope that the members will see the merit in this. Phone towers are an issue in a number of areas of the city, and they will continue to be until technology actually brings about their eradication. I can use that word, Councillor, eradication, because that's what will happen eventually, and that'll be a blessing. But in the meantime, we need to actually tell the telcos how to behave.
Thank you, Worship. I guess the question to staff is the punitive action that can occur as a result of this. Can we have some more information about that?
Through the chair, I'll need to take that on notice. This is not a normal planning process. The tower did receive obtain development approval, but the approval for the obstacle marking has to go to the Federal Department of Infrastructure and Regional Development, who basically oversee CASA, the Civil Aviation Authority. So in terms of taking action against Crown Castle for the marking, I would imagine it would be a civil matter, but I'd need to take that on notice.
Thank you for that.
I have a point of honour, Your Worship. Is this, point of order, sorry. Is this motion ultra vires, therefore?
That effect, that we've got the right to do that.
Thank you, Your Worship. Members, I do note from the previous advice we've received from our planning department, and as written, the companies in question plan on correcting their error in judgment, painting it without full due consideration there. So I think this is really an insurance policy. I don't see it as something that we will do, and obviously if we were to expend any council funds on legal advice, that will need to come back to council anyhow. I think this is an insurance policy that we do intend to pursue the matter, and that we are serious about it finally being remediated. As it has gone on for a long period of time, the owner has been stating all along, oh well, if we've done the wrong thing, we can bring it back, but we're still waiting to see that. So it's really an insurance policy to show that we are going to stick to our guns on this one.
Just to clarify one thing that Councillor Hutchinson said there, if there was a cost in terms of legal fees for taking punitive action, that would come out of a budget line that already exists, wouldn't it? Wouldn't necessarily come back to council for a further authorisation. Councillor Pfeiffer.
Just a question. Look, this has been a long, drawn-out one down in our part of the world, so it's good to see that it's at this point. Look, my question is, how much of the actual mast actually intrudes into airspace? Is it just the top bit, or...?
Through the chair, that's my understanding, basically, where the antennas are. It's something about 18 metres, I think it's from 18 metres upwards that it has to be up obstacle marked.
Dantic here, but I'm just concerned that there's a conflict of information. Does Vodafone have anything to do with this tower? Because on their website, they're coming up on something that references the application. This was built on the 2nd of October 2006. It references Vodafone. I'm just concerned as to we're not sure the carrier and why it's different, that's all.
I'll take that as your contribution, but I mean, we've already discussed that and it can be dealt with by the mover in reply. Any other speakers? I'll come back to you. Let's see if there are any other speakers first. Any others? No. Then, Councillor Hull, you may ask a question or two and then close the debate.
Yeah, the question is, as part of the original development application, was it not the case that the light grey hue was actually spelled out in those terms as part of the development approval?
It was.
Therefore, Mr. Mayor, in closing the debate, that's what we're drawing them back to actually bring them back to their obligations under their development application to have the appropriate colour, being a light grey hue for the bone tower. Now, this light grey hue is a standard drill with bone towers to minimise the impact of the visual intrusion of the bone tower. But we've ended up with the Ronald McDonald version. You know, it looks like his socks, Ronald McDonald socks. And unfortunately, it happens to be possibly the colours of the telco. They're worrying signals. And for those people living in the nearby vicinity that originally were raised concerns about the visual impact of the phone tower, you can only imagine what they think of the eyesore that they now have to look at from their backyards. Now, I'm just saying that we actually do what councils do and hold them to their development application responsibilities. It's pretty straightforward, and we've actually thrown resources at less than this to make sure that people actually comply, it's a compliance issue, with the development application.
All those in favour, please raise your hand. All those against, that's carried.